At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
And joining us on the line now is executive coach Jenny Rogers. She's written various books, including Coaching Skills, Are You Listening? And Personality Type. Today, we're going to be talking a bit about toxic workplace culture and the man-child behaviour. Welcome to the show, Jenny.
Hi, welcome to you. Thank you. Thank you for asking me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's lovely to have you with us. So you've been doing this a while now, haven't you? How would you explain what an executive coach does?
Well, yes, I've been doing it for very nearly 35 years. So I was one of the kind of child entrants to it, if you like. I've been doing it for a very long time. What it is really is when I don't only work with people in senior roles in organizations, but that's a lot of my practice. But it's really about giving people a safe place that they can talk through anything to do with their job that's on their mind. And that could be anything at all. It could be a relationship with their boss. It could be also what's going on for them at home. It could be about their career, where they're going in their career, anything and everything that's to do with work. And also, of course, because private life affects work and work affects private life, it's all everything really is nothing is barred on the agenda.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like an obvious thing, doesn't it? We spend so much time generally of our lives at work. It really helps if we enjoy it and we get on with the people that we work with. But of course, life isn't always like that. It's not always as easy as we'd like it to be sometimes.
That's quite right. In fact, sometimes work is more important than what's going on in people's private lives. It's very easy if you really like what you do to get so absorbed in work that there isn't a lot of time for everything else.
Yeah. And, you know, the idea of being able to sort issues out either by, you know, being able to speak to your boss or your team leader or whatever your work environment might be. But again, that isn't always easy. It could be your boss or your team leader that is the one who you've got the issue with. So sometimes it's not easy to resolve work conflicts, is it?
Well, yeah, you're quite right about that. In fact, there's quite a lot of research suggesting that the main single reason that people leave a job is because they don't get on with their boss. Mm. It's often easier just to leave the job and the organisation sometimes than to try to sort it out. And that's especially true if the behaviour is widely done in the organisation. It just is the norm to behave like that. And if you don't like it, there's not very much point in trying to sort it out on an individual basis. It's better sometimes to leave.
Yeah. You can't kind of change people, as you know, as we know in psychology, all we can do is change our own behavior. And if someone isn't behaving in the way that you'd want them or expect them to behave, sometimes there's nothing you can do about it.
No, but sometimes there is.
Yes. Oh, definitely.
I think that's where people like me are quite useful, because we don't have any skin in the game, really. We are a neutral place where people can talk to us, frankly. I suppose, going back to your original question, one of the things that an executive coach or any kind of coach really offers is that it's a place to be vulnerable. You don't have to be defending yourself all the time.
Mm.
It's a place where you can be yourself, and you can you don't have to pretend to be more knowledgeable or more clever than you really are. You can say what's really on your mind if you want to.
Yeah. So one of the things we wanted to talk about today is the man child and the various problems that he might have. There's been a few kind of reports of various men in the media and the public eye who have been branded having kind of various issues and not really knowing how to deal with women. Greg Wallace is obviously the one that springs to mind, but we can't, you know, comment on specific people necessarily. But just in general, how can you explain what a man child is?
Well, I think when you see the way the debate has been conducted about people like Greg, and as you say, he isn't here, so we can't talk really specifically about him. The debate's been very polarized, really. People have been very, very critical and quite condemnatory about his behavior. And I, from my perspective, because I have worked with quite often with people like that, where the boss has said, look, this guy seems to have a problem. Can you sort him out? And that really isn't what an executive coach does, but that comes to be with the patch sometimes. And I suppose I look at it from a rather different angle and say, well, really, what probably he doesn't mean to be demeaning or aggressive or bullying or sexist or inappropriate or say the wrong thing. And what I find with clients like this is that they don't really understand what it is they've done wrong.
Yeah.
And from looking, because I'm interested in how we develop these problems as adults, and my conclusion for people, for men like this, is that when you look at their childhoods, you will nearly always see that there was an absence of parental interest and control at a very critical stage, around about the ages of, let's say, between 8 and 11. For whatever reason, the parent, particularly the mother, though we mustn't get into that thing of blaming the mum always, because often it's both parents, but they've been preoccupied, they've been ill, one might have died, or they've left, or they have depression, or there's considerable emotional tension in the house for all kinds of reasons, or there are a lot of very much younger children. It could be anything, really. And the eye has been taken off the behavior of this little boy at a very critical stage. So if you like, there's almost like a sort of mini adolescence that happens between the ages of 8 and 11, or more critically, about ages 9 and 10. And if there's no adult modeling or supervision or help at that point, and it is really, well, it is a little bit to do with social class, but maybe we can come to that. But it can happen in very affluent or very poor households. It doesn't really make that much difference. And the boy is flung really into the company of other boys. So in, say, a very underprivileged London household, you might find that this young boy finds companionship and acceptance with other boys. Or if he's sent off to boarding school, and it's a boys' boarding school, or even if it isn't, he's in an all-male environment. Or at that point, you know how boys are still very affixed on friendships with other boys. They're not really that interested in girls usually at that stage. So that the kind of the boy gang becomes the environment. So they never really learn how to moderate that, if you could call it such, rather sort of crude behavior. And then they grow up, and if they're clever and they get a university place, or they don't, or they then, let's say, they get a job in the media, they're really untouched by all the development that should have happened between, say, 11 and 15, 14, 15. Because critically, there hasn't been anybody to say, don't treat girls like that.
Yeah,
you mustn't say those things to women. Oh, but why? And it needs somebody very kind and merciful to explain to them why it will go down very badly.
Yeah. It's so fascinating, isn't it? Because as much as the upbringing of the boy in question can reflect how they behave as an adult, I think also the upbringing of the woman who has been affected by said behaviour can also massively affect how she feels about things. You know, as you say, it's been really polarising how people have felt about Greg Wallace's behaviour, for example. And some women have said, oh, he's out of order. It's absolutely wrong and disgusting the way he's spoken to women and, you know, have no time for it at all. And other women have said, oh, for goodness sake, it's just banter. You know, these women need to chill out. He's not doing anything wrong. We're not talking about sexual abuse here. He's just having a laugh. And it's really fascinating, the two very different opinions. And it always makes me wonder where the woman is coming from as to why she feels a certain way about it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And of course, what plays into this is that very often this is still the case, that as women and girls, we are brought up to believe our job is to be nice and to nurture people, including men. And I think of occasions where I've been the recipient of this kind of behaviour. And sometimes I've thought, just as you say, oh, well, it just doesn't really mean it. It's just banter. And sometimes I thought, he really needs to be challenged on this, and making that distinction. And I think what a lot of women do is feel they have to save men from embarrassing themselves. I think I've been guilty of that a few times myself in my younger days. Oh, God, this guy, really, gosh, it's so gross what he's doing, but he doesn't realise, and he doesn't really mean any harm. So perhaps I should cover it all up for him. So I think we can, as women, we can collude with this behaviour in probably a not very helpful way.
Yeah, it's interesting how women deal with it. And also men as well. You know, men have different opinions on whether it's acceptable or not. And at the end of the day, everybody's opinion on things like this generally comes from either experiencing something similar and thinking, oh, this is just a bit of fun, or, you know, being really offended by something and therefore always feeling that way when it comes up.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think if you are on the receiving end of something like this, which you do find upsetting or hurtful or offensive or not funny, there are ways and ways of dealing with it with the man without making it into a huge big deal. But sometimes I think if it is persistent and it does feel intrusive or even frightening, sometimes it can. I think really men or women should challenge it, but there's no need to make a big drama out of it. I think the more kindly, straightforwardly, and giving feedback in a true spirit of feedback, not criticism, it can really be helpful.
Yeah. I was going to say, so, you know, a lot of people, their response to some of the Greg Wallace issues was, why didn't the women speak up at the time? You know, why is it becoming an issue now, years later? Why, as I say, didn't they speak up at the time? So how should one deal with these kind of issues? Do you think it is important, as you say, to say there and then when the comment comes to you, please don't speak to me like that. I find it inappropriate. Or however you want to phrase it.
Yes, yeah, you've just said it. But I think you've also just made a very important point when asking, well, why didn't people speak up at the time? And where it gets really, really troublesome is where the man is more senior. And I think with many celebrities who've been caught out in this way, that's really been what's happening, that they are regarded as you know, as, in quotes, the talent or senior. The program can't go on without them. People tolerate it. It's not just in the media, of course, but anywhere. And the person, the woman who's on the receiving end, it may be 20 or 30 years younger and at the beginning of her career. So that's why she doesn't speak up, because she's afraid that if she does, she'll get punished. And I think sometimes, sadly, she has been. So, yes, I think the answer to your question is to learn how to speak up absolutely straight away, lightheartedly, and ask, say, look, when you do that, I don't like it. It's upsetting. Please don't do it again. And then smile and move on. Yeah. And then if he does it again, say, oh, actually, you're doing it again. No, please don't put your hand on my thigh like that. I don't like it.
Mm.
See, this is the bit that was missing when these men were growing up. Nobody had those conversations with them or explained why people might not like it.
Yeah, absolutely. We just assume that people know how to behave and how not to behave. But yeah, if nobody's told them what's right and what's wrong, whether we're talking light-hearted comments that people might find offensive, or, you know, as you say, full-blown touching of a colleague that will always be inappropriate. You know, if no one's ever said that you shouldn't do that, then why, people might not know.
No, well, I think a very good example of something that really has changed very much for the better here is wolf whistling from men on construction sites. I don't know how old you are, Hannah, but you're probably too young to remember this, but it is. He used to be absolutely awful. Passing a building site, men stopping and whistling and jeering and calling out and making horrible comments, which I think they probably thought were meant to be flattering,
yes.
But they weren't.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I remember definitely. Yeah, that doesn't happen now so much, does it? I wondered whether it was just me getting older that they don't do it anymore.
No. They have this thing called the considerate constructors scheme. And I think this is a good example, actually, of where social pressure can produce change quite quickly, that people on building, men and women on building sites are told they can't do that, and that it's part of the code of values, just like it is that you have to wear a helmet and protective footwear, which again used not to happen, that you really must do that now, and they do. So I think it's actually quite rare now to go past a group of guys and have them yell and say horrible things, really.
Yeah.
I'm saying, oh yes, you should be flattered because you're attractive. No.
Oh, amazing. So tell us about a lot of this, what we're talking about, comes up in one of your books, Are You Listening? What's that book about?
Well, it's really a book of stories, of fictionalized accounts of real events that have happened to my clients, and it's about how they told me what was happening and how we worked on this together. So, yeah, the most striking example, really, which was very, very unusual, one time only, was a guy who thought that I had amazing influence over his future. I did have some, actually, because I've been asked to assess him and two of his colleagues for promotion. And he made the most outrageous pass at me in a restaurant. And then this is completely ludicrous, because he was at least 25 years younger than me. So how he thought I'd fall for this, I really don't know. And then when I said, well, no, sorry, oh, no, he then tried to sully my reputation with his, well, he did, in fact, with his firm. So they suddenly all contact with them ceased. But I found out not that much later that his whole CV was a lie, and that almost everything he said about himself was untrue. And, you know, we could say I was quite different from the kind of man we've been talking about today. He was really had, I hate to use this word really, but psychopathic tendencies. No guilt, no remorse. And they did promote him, and he made a most terrible series of terrible mistakes, more lies. And they put a private detective on him, in fact, who discovered that really everything he'd said was untrue.
Wow.
But that's an absolute one-off. I mean, anybody who's thinking about being a coach, don't let that put you off, because that's the only time is something like that has really ever happened to me. So it's really, the book is really about challenges and change and the questions that we all have to sort out, really, like, you know, what's my purpose in life? Why, if I'm in a job I don't like, why am I staying? I've made a lot of money, but doesn't make me happy. Or I've got this relationship or trail of relationships in it, but everything seems to be going wrong. What is it? How can I put it right? So it's all the common things that we all deal with, really.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a fascinating balance, isn't it? Looking at work and working out whether money or happiness is more important. And of course, everybody's different. You know, there are people who are really unhappy at work, but put up with it because they earn really good money. And then others who love their jobs, but don't earn much money from it.
that's absolutely right. But what I find is I volunteer as a coach for a charity called SmartWorks, which is about getting women back into employment. And I find this, of course, what those women most need is definitely is money. But apart from that, the issues that they're questions are big apart from, the issues they bring are really exactly the same as my highly paid executive coach clients bring, where they're all about relationships and about happiness and life purpose and meaning, doing work that has meaning, using all the skills you have, all that kind of thing. But I think it's very easy to say money doesn't bring you happiness. I think because you do need, the more money you have up to a certain extent, the better a range of choices you have.
Yeah.
So ideally you want both.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be nice, wouldn't it, if everyone had that?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, it's fascinating subjects we've been talking about. Jenny Rogers, thank you very much for joining us. And if listeners want to get a copy of your book, Are You Listening? It'll be available to buy on our website, tre.radio. Jenny, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for asking me.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.